Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Kent Summers will come on board with AZ Central Sports. That will be in about 15 minutes. Michael Fabiano is going to join us today on the show. Michael Fabiano, of course, NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst. You know, fantasy football, 41 million Americans play the game. And now that the combine is through and the mock drafts are coming out, this is just kind of like you're picking stocks. It's kind of like you're doing this thing where you look at what are the players doing now. And as it gets closer to the draft, we'll get our first look at, you know, with the combine now out of the way and some of the players, maybe Adrian Peterson, where he ends up, D'Angelo Williams and all that stuff with Michael Fabiano. Talk to the Lopes. Looking forward to visiting with Dan Marley today. Have not had Dan on in a few weeks. Dan lost his dad about 10 days ago, so condolences to the coach. We'll talk about the season as that has progressed. Also, the schedule. I'm hearing some other big-time schools. They already have a home-and-home with Louisville coming up and San Diego State, but Grand Canyon University basketball, of course, big part of what's going on campus. And we'll talk to the coach with Dan Marley. Eric Sorensen is with us today, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything. And I am in a bit of a fog today on a few topics. I'm not quite sure where I want to start on the show today. Michael Sam was named to Dancing with the Stars, and everybody on social media is reacting. I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care.
I don't care. Don't care. The storming the court story is kind of interesting because there is an Arizona angle to that. And the Adrian Peterson screaming match, you know, because Peter King said last week the Cardinals could be one of those teams, although Dallas is more likely. Some stuff around the Cardinals, this Ohio State cruise ship being stranded in the fog in Mexico. I like that story quite a bit.
Yep. We had a huge homecoming last night, though. How could you not forget? How could you forget?
It's probably where I'm going to start is with the Suns.
Wow.
Let's get you caught up on what is on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. And in fact, with the weather moving into our great state, it's my understanding my friends up on the mountain are saying, we're getting more snow at sunrise. You know what that means? You need to stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. With the snow coming down, that's the place to stay and make that your base camp, so to speak. Pull down on the slots, eat some great food during the day, head on up to Sunrise. You get all your ski equipment up there. Head on out of the valley around the state to the Sunrise Ski Resort and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino at night. You can sit around and visit, have some drinks, pull down on the slots, some entertainment. Make a great long weekend out of it. Start looking ahead to this weekend with snow falling again right now. Why not think of the Honda Resort and Casino, the place to stay, Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That is the Honda Resort and Casino. The Suns are just awful. You know, we're going to start hearing this narrative that includes terms like gelling and just stuff that makes it seem like, well, they've got to go through another period of adjustment. I don't know. They couldn't play defense to save their lives before they traded away Dragic and before they traded away Isaiah Thomas. So last night was maybe the low mark of the season, in my opinion, when you have the stinking Celtics, and they're not any good at all. They're not. And they played an overtime game in Los Angeles the night before against the stinking Lakers. And the Suns come out and give up 67 in the first half to a bad, bad basketball team. Once again, there is no sense of urgency to start it out. And it's not on the coach to have the sense of urgency, in my humble opinion. Jeff Hornacek can only do so much. And then when the buzzer sounds, it's not like he can just say, okay, guys, jumpstart you, be ready to play. They weren't ready to play. It's one thing if you're a high school team and you're not ready to play. I think that falls on the coach. In college, a little bit less on the coach, a little bit more on the players, but there still is something to be said for college teams not being ready to go from the get-go with the coach. When you're a pro or supposed pro and you're being paid and this is your job, it doesn't matter what it is. You have to be able to motivate yourself and be ready to go and have the passion to play in whatever it is that you do. Every day I wake up, one of the first thoughts on my mind is today's show. What we're going to do today. Our staff, that's what they're all about. There's nobody that mails it in. And if they do, they're not here anymore. The same thing applies in professional sports. You can't have guys that just kind of roll in half asleep. It's why I have said repeatedly that Markieff Morris is not going to be a player that leads you to a title. He might be a complimentary piece, but I don't see a heart there. You know, I mean, Alex Len played his ass off last night. Alex Len played a terrific game last night for the Suns. But man, late in the game, you've got Isaiah Thomas sticking a dagger in you late in the game last night.
Three, score it, and the foul. Isaiah Thomas comes back to Phoenix, and it's the biggest shot of the night with 97 seconds to play.
Here's Isaiah Thomas, the former Sun, implicated in the selfish narrative from last week. Isaiah Thomas on coming back to Phoenix last night.
It felt good to beat the team that traded you away and also to play all right. So they probably thought I was going to try to go off on them, you know, which I was. I was trying to, but at the end of the day, coach just was like, just make the right play. If you got the ball and you're able to score, score. If not, when they're doubling you, just find the open man. And I tried to do that in the first half.
Of course. You can crank up the boombox when your team blows. 21 points, 7 assists last night for Isaiah Thomas. IT. Let's give everybody a nickname. And then when they leave, we're going to bury them. That's what the Suns have tried to do here as a front office since they left.
And just in case you're scoring at home, last night, Isaiah Thomas and Goran Dragic combined for 44 points and 17 assists. And both teams won, the Heat and the Celtics. That's my overreaction statement of the day right there. So.
But of course, those two guys are selfish. And of course, it had everything to do with why the Suns have suddenly lost 8 of 9 and 5 in a row. And they're almost a 500 team now. And they're well on their way to being done by mid-April. So they'll have nothing to talk about other than pro football, which is fine for a lot of people. I don't know. I'd kind of like to see these organizations get it figured out. 67 points in the first half to the Celtics. Here's Jeff Hornacek after the game last night.
You know, it's hard to battle back. You know, we give up too many points again. I think our last five games, you know, I remember 127 from the Rockets, 115, 117, 115, 113. I mean, you're putting so much pressure on the offense to score and outscore a team. We got to figure out a way to stop these guys.
It's the roster that you've been dealt, man. They got to figure it out. But, of course, last summer, this will all work out. This will be perfect. But we didn't think these guys would be selfish. Now, is it selfish? Isaiah Thomas brought up a good point before the game last night. Is it selfish if you want to be a starter? And the answer to that is no. If you were Steve Young behind Joe Montana for all those years, and you were like, I'll never get to be a starter, I'm not going to be any good, and then eventually you get your chance to play, same sort of thing applies. You know, if on my staff of people here that work at Sports 360 AZ, if they're just content with their role and they don't want to get any better, they're not here. And that's how it is. You know, you've got to have guys that are pushing one another and do it in a good environment. It's one thing if Isaiah Thomas goes in over and over and over, but I think any player, if they don't go in to try to fight for more playing time, they're not worth their salt. I don't want them on my team. I want guys that are there to play. Somebody sent me a clip of Jimmy Kimmel, and he had Kobe Bryant on, and they played a clip to Kobe of Nick Young, who's just a knucklehead, but he's got a cute little nickname, Swaggy P. So it's really exciting to say that over and over and over, even though it's very apparent he can't play. He's already bounced around. And they run this clip after they win a worthless game the other night about how they're this and how they're that. And Jimmy Kimmel asked Kobe for his response, and Kobe looked like he just wanted to rip his eyes out. Like, this is why it's probably a good thing that I'm sitting here next to you, Jimmy Kimmel, because I can't play with guys like that. That's ridiculous. It's one thing if you're along those lines. Another if you're Isaiah Thomas saying, hey, give me more time. So Boston comes in here. Next week, they're going to go to Miami. And we're going to hear this whole narrative about how they need to get to know each other, how we need to gel together, and all that stuff. Which what they did is they took an enormous step backward. They may have said the other day we're a better team. I don't know, 67 to the Celtics at home. It got to the point where Star Wars night didn't even matter. I didn't see very many Star Wars characters towards the end of the game. Were there anybody? Eric, did they show Star Wars night? I didn't sit through that from start to finish.
Yeah, they showed some people that were dressed up.
They found a couple over like in section 134 or something.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, like you said, it'd be nice if we were talking about the Suns winning games instead of Star Wars night. It would be nice if we talked about ASU basketball making the tournament instead of the curtain of distraction.
Yeah.
But that's the way life goes sometimes.
I like what the Cardinals have done here in the offseason. We're going to talk to Kent Summers here in a couple of minutes. With Kyman Arians being extended, there'll be a press conference today at 1 o'clock. You know, Larry Fitzgerald staying with the Cardinals, I think that's a move that was for past experience and what he's done for the organization and for what he's going to bring to them off the field. It's smart business to extend him, even if they overpaid. And if it's Michael's prerogative, it's fine. But what are they going to do with Dockett? What are they going to do with Dan Williams, Cromartie? They released Ted Ginn yesterday. Ted Ginn was a big disappointment. Of all the offseason signings a year ago, Ted Ginn was the one that you looked at and said, boy, he should give them something. It looked like he didn't want to get hit while he was here. So, and in the playoff game, it was just a disaster. Rob Manfred swung by the Diamondbacks this morning. The new commissioner of baseball, if you've not been paying attention to baseball, and that would be probably most of you, the new commissioner dropped in on camp today. Yesterday, he held a State of the Union, and there's been all sorts of talk about trying to speed up the game and all that stuff. If we were in San Francisco or Los Angeles, we would care more because they've been to the postseason, actually won a few things here recently. But because we're in Arizona and the team has done nothing for a long period of time, and they're not expected to do much this year, and I'm fine with that. You know, they had to drop a bomb on the thing. So Rob Manfred dropped in today. The position players report today. It's fine. It's fine. I'm happy we have baseball here, and I'm happy they have Chip Hale. I kind of like hearing Chip Hale talk and his vision of where the organization is going. And with La Russa here, it's going to take time. Storming the court. So last night, and we'll take a break after this, but last night they stormed the court in Manhattan, Kansas. Why do they storm the court in Manhattan, Kansas? Because there's nothing else to do in Manhattan, Kansas, for one. It's a little dinky college town, and that's fine. And they beat their arch rival, Kansas, and that's fine. When Arizona State beats U of A, what do they do in Tempe? They storm the court. When U of A beats ASU down in Tucson, what do? They pick up their stuff, they go to the locker room, and they move on to the next game. Because they don't, you know, they don't care in Tucson about beating ASU. It's not a big deal. And they drilled ASU there earlier this year. So last night, when I see this storming the court, this is a story that comes up every year. I could go through the Joe K story for you. You're better off going out and Googling Joe K, J-O-E-K-A-Y. Joe K in Tucson was playing a game where he got stormed on the court and he got run over and he got knocked to the ground. And Joe K ended up being partially paralyzed. He had a torn artery in his neck and a stroke, and his life was never the same. That story, storming the court, took place here in Arizona. So we have a story here that you can always fall back on. It's just simply Googling Joe K. I'm not going to go further into that. I guess storming the court would be fine in some people's minds. In my mind, it's a safety thing. This isn't old man get off my grass deal. It's just kids nowadays storming the court don't really take into consideration the other teams, I don't believe. But hiring more security and doing things like that, we're going to see more storming the courts here in the next 2 weeks. This is the time of year where we see storming the court. It's going to happen. It's going to happen in tournament play and all that stuff. On the other side, Kent Summers, all things around the Arizona Cardinals. And the combine as well. He froze his keister back in Indianapolis, as Eric did. Michael Fabiano in about 30 minutes. Guys, if you're like a stock trader, you're going to need this Fabiano stuff. 41 million Americans play fantasy football. Now that the combine is done, the projections are out for mock drafts. Who do you need to focus in on for your team? Even though the draft's 60 days away, it's time to get into that and then talk to the Lopes with Dan Marley. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
So around the combine, there's a lot being made about this Viking blow up between the agent and Adrian Peterson's guy and the Vikings. And I saw where Kent Summers tweeted this Jameis Winston helping someone in a wheelchair out of the airport. That's a cool little story. A couple of stories may have gotten lost in the shuffle. A lot going on around the Cardinals with Kyman Arian's contract extensions today at 1. Larry Fitzgerald staying with the Cardinals as well. And off-the-field moves to get into all things, as mentioned. AZ Central Sports Cardinals insider Kent Summers joins us back from where he froze his keister off in Indianapolis, although he's mostly indoors. What was the highlight for you over the weekend or weekdays and end back there?
that's a really good question. Probably the Saturday morning when it snowed. It was beautiful there finally, and the temperatures let up. So outside of the football stuff, that was the highlight. And it was from selfish point of view, I was glad the Larry Fitzgerald story was kind of put to bed without dragging on for 3 weeks and not breaking at 8 o'clock at night. It was done one morning. An hour later, Steve Keim spoke and write the story, and Larry's a Cardinal for 2 more years.
Were you surprised with the dollar figure for Larry?
Yeah, I was. I was surprised at how high it was. I thought it would be more in the range of $8 to $9 million. And I know, people will say, well, he was due $16 million and his cap number was 23.5, but we all knew he was never going to get that. So I think the Cardinals in a way, paid a little extra because he's such an iconic figure here and he's been so important to the team. And I think he can still play a little bit. And then, it lowers their cap number and kind of shoves down the road the further problem of, accounting for his, previous big contracts. At the end of 2 years, I think, the dead money on these deals are still going to be about $10 million.
The thing on this one, Ken, is I'm fine with the number they gave Larry. It's fine. Is he the same receiver? He's actually playing a different spot than what we've seen through the years. There is something to be said for when he does retire, if he retires as a Cardinal and he does go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and he does go into the Ring of Honor. And yeah, Aeneas came back and did it. And Adrian Wilson finished elsewhere. And I'm sure that not the Hall of Fame for Adrian, but the Ring of Honor and all that stuff. And Warner, of course. So I'm fine with the business. There's a business side to this, obviously, than not just all about being on the football field. Because I had some fans were really up in arms like, wow, they overpaid Larry for this. Well, it's Michael's money. It's fine. I don't see where it really hamstrings him.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it helps him in the short term. I guess you could say that they're overpaying him a bit because I think his cap number next year goes to, $13, $14 million. And if he's not a number one receiver and not putting up, 80 catches and 1,000 yards, that's a lot. That's a big cap number for a number two receiver. But, that said, I think you could also make a strong football argument for keeping him. I mean, Michael Floyd is still inconsistent, still hasn't ascended to that, for sure number one spot, although we've seen flashes. John Brown, I think, is always going to be exactly what he is, a two or a three who can get deep and make big plays. And, I look back when Carson Palmer was healthy, when Larry Fitzgerald was healthy, the last 5 games, they were both on the field at full speed. That's when that offense started. You could start to see signs of what Bruce Arians had been talking about for 2 years. It was starting to move the ball a little bit. Larry was, I think, in that stretch, averaged 5 or 6 catches, 80 yards, had a couple of touchdowns. It was like not only Carson Palmer found him, or maybe Bruce Arians began to realize, hey, this guy has to be more of a focal point of this offense and in my game plans. But I thought they had really found something there before Palmer went down with a knee injury and before Larry, suffered the sprained MCL.
Talking with Ken Summers, AZ Central Sports, with Brad Sussmat. You can check out his content, azcentralsports.com. All things around the Cardinals press conference later today. I think it's been a good offseason, obviously, with Kyman Arians getting the extensions. That's the right move. Fitz staying with the Cardinals. So let's advance the story further. Darnell Dockett, do you expect them to work out an agreement with him?
Going to be very sticky. Here's the thing to me, Darnell's been a good player for them, but he's a very proud guy. But his cap number is $10 million for a 34-year-old defensive end coming off an ACL injury. You add age, injury, years, et cetera, and you can see why the team, you know, wants to get him at a lower number. I think that's going to be a tough sell for his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, to make to Darnell. And I understand where Darnell's coming from, too. It's, you know, he has been loyal to this team. And last year when he was injured, he was one of the few guys on IR that Bruce Arians, you know, said, hey, you're traveling with us. I want your passion around the team. And they talked all last year about how important Darnell was to that defense and what a big loss it was. And then, you know, a few months later, you know, basically asking him to take a pay cut. But I think at some point, you know, Darnell's got to play businessman too and think, okay, what kind of market is there going to be out there for a person in my situation? I mean, I don't know that people are going to throw huge amounts of money at him because of the age and because of the injury. So, you know, is this Cardinals offer to him fair? I don't know what it is. I don't think much progress has been made between Steve Keim and Drew Rosenhaus. So I think, you know, staying here makes a ton of sense for Darnell. And surely if he rejects the Cardinals deal, to me, he's taking a big gamble because I just don't know that there's a big market for a guy in his situation.
And I had a bunch of notes from fans yesterday. They saw the tweet that Patrick Peterson put up yesterday afternoon. I'm sure you did as well, about Dockett's situation and trying to draw the correlation of, well, if they took care of Fitz, they should take care of Dockett. That's apples and oranges to me.
Oh, yeah. That you know, that's a player being loyal to a teammate and a friend, et cetera. But, you know, when Darnell Dockett was Patrick Peterson's age or level in the league, he was taken care of. He got a new contract, and it's happened a couple of times with Darnell. So, you know, the Cardinals, you know, did right by him too. They paid Darnell when there was a time Darnell, you know, demanded to be traded, was unhappy here. You know, he gets fined by Ken Wisenhunt for getting in an on-field fight with Kerry Rhodes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the Cardinals stuck by him. So I think sometimes players are the worst ones to listen to when it comes to planning for the future. And that's one thing a GM has to do is, you know, kind of shut all that noise out and, you know, to invoke the Bill Belichick cliche, you know, do what's best for the team. And that sometimes can be, you know, be just making a cold-blooded move.
Let's just zip through some names here and give me a quick sentence or two or a little bit more than that of if you think they're back or not of their situation. Dan Williams.
I don't think he's back. I don't. They don't seem to. You know, they want him at a certain price, and kind of. You know, I think he played in 40% of the snaps last year, and I, you know, they probably feel like they can replace him, and it makes more, you know, money sense to do it. You know, and not pay him that kind of cash. And I think in this market, when you've got teams like, you know, at Jacksonville, Tennessee, et cetera, with some money, I think you could see him go.
Antonio Cromartie.
I think he's gone. I just do. If he comes back, it's going to be a situation like last year where he tests the market and the money is just not out there. I think he liked playing with the Cardinals. I'm not sure he was crazy about Arizona. I think he would he'd like to go back east. And, you know, if Justin Bethel is as good as Bruce Arians and Steve Keim have told us, then it's time to start him.
Lyle Sendlin.
Whew. That's a tough one. You're talking about a guy that's, you know, been a fixture around here for quite some time, but sort of like Darnell without the injury, his cap number's up there a little bit. He's up there a little bit in age, and I think there was a feeling around the team that he wore down as the season went on. I think they would like to take him, have him take less money. And, you know, if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Lyle because, you know, he's a local guy, and I don't think he really wants to pack up and go.
In the free agency, it's two weeks from today, right? If I remember right on the dates.
March 10th.
Yeah. From your point of view, is there anybody that I didn't bring up that you're like, here's an obvious glaring one that they're going to have to do something with? Or are those the ones that, this is just my view, those are the ones that jump out to me, is what are their situations entail? Do you have another one or two?
Yeah, they're, you know, not really. I think, you know, Gerard Powers at cornerback, it has a number that's up there. Not that they're going to get rid of Gerard Powers. I think just the opposite. But I think he's a guy they could go to and work with and lower his cap number and maybe, you know, extend his deal out a little bit and get a little more breathing space. And, you know, he's got a few more, you know, years on him. He's not even 30 yet. So doing something with him makes a lot of sense. You know, I think Tommy Kelly could be back. They tried to get something done during the season, but you know, he kind of wanted to wait and see how the season went. But you know, most of all, I think you hit on the majority of them.
Yeah. On the combine, we're talking with Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports. Check his content out, AZ Central Sports. He's also on Twitter, is a great follow as well. Press conference later today with the Cardinals, with Steve Keim and Bruce Arians having their contracts extended. At the combine, so you put the tweet out about seeing Jameis Winston in the airport. Rather than just reading the tweet, what happened? What did you see?
Well, I'm at the airport Saturday waiting to fly home, and on this flight, I found out later, it seemed like practically everybody, coaches, players, the top four quarterback prospects, I think, were on the flight, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota and Brett Hundley, et cetera. But I'm sitting across from the gate quite a ways away, and along with Darren Urban of AZ Cardinals, we saw Jameis Winston sitting there with Bryce Petty kind of off to themselves, and then they got up to go somewhere, and I wanted to ask Jameis just a couple of questions, because earlier in the week, Bruce Arians had said, hey, I coached him at my camp in Birmingham. He's a great kid, et cetera, et cetera. So, and it really kind of, I didn't notice this, but because I was so focused on trying to get him, but before I could get to him, he notices an elderly man in a wheelchair, really struggling to push his wheelchair, and I think his wife was in a wheelchair next to him, and one attendant was really trying to push both chairs, and it wasn't working. And Winston went over and offered his help and asked the man, you know, where do you need to go? I'll get you where you need to go. And he said, baggage. And so he started pushing him for, you know, I probably pushed him 50, 100 yards until, you know, another attendant saw him and kind of took over. And, you know, I don't think Jameis Winston knew anybody else was around. He certainly didn't do it to show off or hoping that a bunch of reporters saw it, because you know he obviously didn't know me at all,
sure.
and then I talked to him for a couple of minutes after that. So it was a pretty cool scene for a kid who's had more than his share of troubles. And to be honest, you know, I've been telling people I'm not sure how Tampa Bay Bucks pick him number one, given his history. Can they trust him? You know, and then you start to wonder. It's like, okay, well, maybe he's worked in a little more homework on.
You know, it's a cool antidote, and it got retweeted, I guess, 1,000 times, and you know, people want to hear that type of stuff. When you were at the combine, you're not allowed down on the field. You're not allowed anywhere in there. They bring the players in. But from the people that you spoke to, let's just go through the Arizona side of things. Did any of the ASU players, obviously Jalen Strong is the one that's getting the most attention for his 40 time and his vertical. Did Pete, did Hundley, did the ASU guys, who helped themselves the most of those in-state players?
I think Hardison from ASU helped himself. I think he's helped himself all off season with a strong Senior Bowl. I think people were impressed with him there. I don't think Hundley hurt himself at all. He did. I think he set a record in one of the drills for quarterbacks. You know, the big thing with him is sort of like what you hear about Mariota. You know, can he stay in the pocket and go through progressions?
Right.
And throw and anticipate where receivers are going to be. You know, I think Andres Pete was fine. He looked nervous when he met with reporters, but he looks like a guy who's just kind of just on the surface of what he can become. And I know some people think he's a first round pick. Others say, you know, there were some games where he wasn't very good at tackle, and you know, he probably shouldn't be taken before the second round at all. I think Jamil Douglas from ASU is an intriguing prospect. You know, he played left tackle last year for ASU. I think in the pros, some people seem to be projecting him as guard. He's more of a body type that's built for that, with shorter arms, et cetera. I think he's a guy that's going to be a good pick for somebody in the mid-rounds.
I'll talk to you about draft stuff at another time if you can make the time. I've kept you long enough, and I'll see you later today out of the press conference. Thanks.
Okay, Brad, thank you.
It's Kent Summers, good stuff there. Inside and out, all around the combine. Great antidote about Jameis Winston. And you can check his content out on AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and, of course, their Cardinal Insider. On the other side, there's this Adrian Peterson story caught my eye. I'm going to circle back around on the Suns because, you know, you don't want to, in mid-February, say, look, I've just had enough. It was the low point of the season last night. There's no other way to put it. It's the awful Boston Celtics. And what about being an Ohio State Buckeye on a cruise that gets stranded? There's a whole bunch of Buckeyes that are stuck. Let's explain that story, too. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. I came in grumpy this morning. I sat through the last 30 minutes of the Suns game last night, and I'll never get that 30 minutes back. It was just painful. Eric sent me a cool story about our buddy Pedro Gomez last night. I was sifting through about somebody did the backstory on him. Who was it again?
Yeah, Jeff Perlman.
Was it Perlman that
well-respected, longtime national writer.
He did a big breakdown on Pedro that I was reading while I was sitting in my office watching the end of the Suns game. And, you know, I usually sit and make a couple notes of things I want to talk about. And all I had was defense, question mark, underline, 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 underline. That was it. There's nothing else to put. And it would be nice. I don't know. It would be nice if the people doing the broadcast. Tom Chambers looked pissed after the game. He just looked like, you got to be kidding me. This is Boston. These guys are horrible. And we got to sit here and do a show now around this stuff. Which is great. I would much rather have that than the typical rah-rah, cheer-cheer, all is great, we lost by 15, you know, or whatever the amount was last night.
They're just so inconsistent, because you remember...
No, they are consistent.
Consistently inconsistent.
They're just awful in defense. They're consistent with it. They're not good.
Late before the new year, the Suns had one of those stretches where they lost to some really bad teams. They had like a 5 or 6 game losing streak. They lost to the Pistons at home. And then all of a sudden they rattle off like 7 or 8 straight wins, or 8 or 9 or 9 to 10. And then into the All-Star break, you've seen the slide back into the reverting back to their old ways. And now who knows what's going to happen. So
here's the thing on
I just know they're not going to make the playoffs. That's what we do know is going to happen.
It's the deal where you look at how they put this roster together and said, hey, Jeff, go play with it. Alex Len is a developing inside presence who's only 21 years of age, who is fun to watch, and I'm holding my breath that there's no more foot problems with him, okay? Then you get to the power forward position, and you look and you say, there's nobody on this roster that can clearly go down low, and they toss the ball down low to him, and he backs somebody in, and he gets the easy two and gets the three-point play and gets fouled. There's nobody like that on this roster. So why they put this team together like they did, where it's like, well, let's get a bunch of guards and let's not have anybody else down low. So what happens last night? A team as bad as Boston gets 30 free throws and the Suns get, I think, 15 or 16. Because there's nothing going on inside. There's no, hey, Alex, go post up. Let's throw it inside to you. Let's have you back down somebody, get fouled and go to the free throw line. Other than him, there's nobody. So you sit there with Markieff Morris standing around outside. And if he feels like playing, he may have a nice game. He may have 30. And as they like to say, Keefe, I don't know. The only Keefe I think of is Adam Keefe, and he couldn't play. So this Keefe needs to show a ticker on a consistent basis, and I've just had enough. There's just nothing there consistently inside. And you give Boston 30 free throws? Come on. So they play at Denver tomorrow night. I'm thinking about going to the game against San Antonio on Saturday just because it's Popovich and Sarver. There's always something silly that comes out of that. It always happens. And Jeff can't get to Jeff, and this is not a criticism of Jeff Hornacek. His team wasn't ready to play last night. And you're going to say, well, of course, it's the coach's deal. No, it's not. If you are a professional and you're getting a paycheck, you should not have to have anybody walk in and get you motivated, psyched up, ready to play. The coach tells you what the game plan is. Here is what we see, their strengths and their weaknesses. Go out and execute. Thumbs up, thumbs down, fist, whatever play you want to call. Play some defense. Get into guys. Be ready to play. He can't do any more than that. And they're never ready to play. So... you know, last night was one of those wasted nights. You have the Suns lose to an awful team in Boston. And then you have the Coyotes just dreadful, just slugging through. And they get shut out last night. And every game for the Coyotes is just painstaking at this point. If there was a franchise in town that I wish that they would just say, we're done for the year. We're packing it in. We're going to give money back. We're not going to finish the season. It would be the hockey team here in town. Because I feel bad for Dave Tippett. I feel bad for Don Maloney. The Adrian Peterson story is really interesting to me. So there's always this public persona and this public way of going about how much guys love one another. I was going to ask Kent about this because I've seen the agent and a couple times I've seen the agent and the owner, the general manager get into it. There's times in games where you go downstairs and you walk through an arena and it's a back part of the arena and nobody should be back there. And I just happen to be back there and you hear the yelling and the screaming going on. And it may be an agent in person with a front office executive, or it may be a front office executive on the phone with an agent, whatever. So this story about Adrian Peterson's agent having to be separated from the Vikings front office, one of the people of the Vikings front office, after it got heated. This story today is completely blowing up in Minnesota. In fact, the former general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's now with ESPN, Mark Domenech, had to separate the guys. So, you know, just vision this. Here's an agent. Here's a front office exec. They're out in Indianapolis. I mean, Eric, did you ever get into an altercation with someone at the combine? I mean,
never.
Was there somebody from a competing entity in media that you're like, you know what? Screw you. I'm better than you. You don't respect, you know, never.
No, there was a little dust up this year at the combine, but nothing major. And it didn't involve me.
Oh, there was a dust up.
Oh, yeah, just a little one. It didn't last very long.
Anybody here in town?
No. They were bringing a player through, one of the high profile players.
Yeah.
And somebody was asking a question because you can walk with the players into the media room.
Right.
And we're like, you know, the media is like ants to,
honey.
You know, to sugar. Yeah. It's just like, okay, we got to get whatever we can from this player. And one of the out-of-town writers interrupted another out-of-town writer and never got his question in before he went to the podium and didn't get his question at the podium. And so then the other writer came out into the lobby and MF'd the other writer.
Great.
And there was, you know, it wasn't a fight. But it was just like, really, like you're wearing that credential. You're a member of the professional working media. We don't need media people fighting each other.
Yeah.
Get over it.
But we do like having an agent, especially Adrian Peterson's agent, get into it with the Vikings.
And that's common.
Sure it is.
It's common.
Sure it is. If you guys think this is all sweet and sugary, getting these players to agree to contracts, it's not happening.
Yeah, you got agents fighting for more money. You have teams trying to drop the price.
I'm thinking that Robert Sarver and Gorin's agent had a nice little chat or two that had a little salt added to it. I have to believe that happened. So on the other side, well, actually, first, before we get to the break, this segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I'm going to swing by Santan Ford later today. Stop in from time to time to see what's going on, how business is going. Talk sports with the guys that are out there. See how people are handled. They have a gong there. They have this big old gong in the lobby. And at Santan Ford, whenever they make a sale, they ring the gong. And so I've been in offices there before, whether it's general manager Tim Hovicks or his assistant or sitting talking to Bob Johnson out in the lobby or whatever, and the gong is going gong, 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 gong. And they all clap, and the people that bought the vehicle, they clap too. And they have some fun out there. You know, this is not, hey, walk onto a dealership, what's your payment, and that's it. That's not how this works. It's very much about you. They say at Santan Ford, it's all about you. And, of course, Tim is involved with the Arizona State, with the Cardinals, with the Diamondbacks, and he's involved with us. You walk into a dealership that's involved in the sporting community. They're also involved in community-based actions as well, not just with sports. They're very community and civic-minded, which is the way it should be. It's the way it really should be. Stop in for yourself and check out the difference. It's Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is, all about you. So now the draft order, it's already set. The combine's done. Now there's players being slotted. Some off-season movement. So we figured let's bring Michael Fabiano on today. NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy football analyst. 41 million Americans play the sport year-round. We got to talk to Michael Fabiano about where the staff is looking at the NFL Network now that the combine is through. That's next. Coming up in about 15 minutes, talk to the Lopes. Dan Marley joins us. Always good to catch up with Thunder Dan, head coach, Grand Canyon University, and talk to the Lopes, Grand Canyon University. That's coming up in hour number two. Thanks again earlier to Kent Summers. Michael Fabiano joins us now for a couple of minutes. It's good to have Michael on. It's been a couple of months. NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy football analyst. You have 41 million Americans that play fantasy football. This is not something you just pick up a sheet or go to a website on like July 15th. This is year-round. And now that the combine is through and also some stuff happening with running backs, we figured let's have Michael on for a few minutes. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm pounding through it. I have to tell you, things have slowed down a little bit since I saw you at the Open, which is fine by me. You know, Larry Fitzgerald is back here. I don't know what his fantasy value is going to be, but he got overpaid. But nonetheless, he's back. It's fine with me.
He certainly is. And I don't know that his value is going to increase or decrease as a result of the contract. I'm more interested in seeing about the rehab of Carson Palmer. But as good as Fitzgerald has been in his career, and he's likely a Hall of Famer, he's probably a three right now in fantasy, and that's about as much as you're going to see him drafted as in 2015.
We'll get into that as we get closer. I want to focus on the combine. So if Tampa Bay takes Jameis Winston, what does that do from a fantasy standpoint? I know you're not big on rookies, okay, but now that it's true, where are you at on Jameis Winston in fantasy value?
Well, he's certainly going to be an upgrade over Josh McCown, who was their quarterback last year, or Mike Glennon. He's not the running style of quarterback that maybe a lot of people think he is. He did rush for 7 touchdowns in 2 years at Florida State, but a lot of people compare him more to a Ben Roethlisberger type, a guy who can run if he needs to. And you know me, I always love the running quarterbacks. But Winston is someone who probably won't be picked in redrafts, maybe until the late rounds, if at all. A lot of people like to pick players based on name value.
And you look at so, what he – go ahead, Michael.
No, so I also want to preface that by saying over the last couple of years, we haven't seen rookie quarterbacks make a big impact. I remember there was a few years ago where you had Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III, and we were maybe starting to see that this trend was going to emerge. But over the last couple of years, whether it's been because the position just hasn't been as good in terms of the depth and the talent and the classes or what have you – Geno Smith and Derek Carr and Teddy Bridgewater and guys like this over the last couple of years haven't made a huge impact. So Winston's draftable in seasonal leagues, but it's not worth really going more than taking him in the late rounds.
And you want to wait and see what Tampa Bay does to put pieces around him, or do you feel like they've got enough there? I mean, they went draft with wide receiver last year, but just talk about the parts that he has to work with in Tampa.
Right. I like the parts in the passing game. Mike Evans is a very talented player. Mm-hmm. We saw that 12 touchdowns last year. And it wasn't like he was being thrown the football by Brad Johnson or Doug Williams, who are the first two really good quarterbacks to come to mind from Tampa Bay. And he is someone who people are going to be leaning on in fantasy to be a borderline number one, number two wide receiver. Vincent Jackson, it looks like he will remain with the Buccaneers. And he's 32, but hey, he's still got the ability to make plays, especially in the red zone, which unfortunately we didn't see enough of in 2014. Don't forget about Austin Seferian Jenkins, who could make a leap as an NFL sophomore, the big tight end. He is also a piece of that passing game. Now, where the Buccaneers have the most question marks is in the running game.
Right.
Doug Martin came back last year, had a couple of decent games, but overall he's been a major disappointment since what was a great rookie season. They also like Charles Sims there, so he could be a deep sleeper that fantasy owners want to keep tabs on. So I think in terms of the passing game, though, I think the weapons are there for Winston to make not a huge impact as a rookie, but potentially be a number two or a matchup-based starter when you're playing the matchups and when you're maybe streaming quarterbacks.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com. Let's say Tampa Bay goes with Marcus Mariota. How would you see that playing in terms of profitability having Mariota there in Tampa from a fantasy value?
Well, I think it's the same situation, really. You're going in with a quarterback who is inexperienced, certainly has upside, certainly has talent. And to me, it's funny, too, because the two best quarterbacks in this draft class are Mariota from Oregon and Jameis Winston from Florida State. Neither one of those schools has had much success in terms of
big name quarterbacks coming out into the pros.
Yep.
You think about Joey Harrington, you think about Achilles Smith, you think about EJ Manuel, you think about Christian Ponder. So that's sort of going against them. And I'm not going to put that completely against them. You know, I love to look at trends like that. But again, they're both rookie quarterbacks. And so you're not going to see these guys ranked among the top 20 at their position, regardless of the teams that they go to. I think Mariota likely is going to drop a little bit down. Maybe the Jets decide to take him, although they really need help at wide receiver too. So they're going to have to determine what they want to do with their top pick. Tennessee looks like they're going to stay with Zach Mettenberg, mm-hmm. which means that they'll probably take a defensive player. So Mariota could slip a little bit. Who knows? The Browns, what's their quarterback situation right now? I mean, Johnny Manziel's dealing with some personal demons, and he's in rehab, and Brian Hoyer is a free agent. So there's a lot of question marks there. I wouldn't be surprised if Mariota fell down a little bit, but the importance of the position coupled with the lack of real true NFL-ready prospects at quarterback, that's going to keep both of these guys drafted likely within the top 10. Okay. And Winston, of course, likely number one.
Switch over to wide receiver. I know we don't know who's going to take whom. We assume the Raiders mm-hmm. will be looking at wide receiver, but if it's Kevin White or if it's Amari Cooper and it's the Raiders that take a wide receiver, mm-hmm. Either one of those, what do you make out of that?
Very talented. And I think Kevin White probably made himself the number one wide receiver with his combine, because a lot of people say he won the combine, if you can do such a thing.
Yeah.
And the Raiders certainly need help there between the talent that they have there, which is good. It's not great. I mean, you're talking about guys like Andre Holmes, and, you know, Denarius Moore, who's likely on his way out. James Jones, who's a pretty solid veteran, but he's not a number one wide receiver at the NFL level. The thing that I like about the Raiders this year is that they actually have a quarterback who intrigues me. And Derek Carr's got a good arm. Mm-hmm. He showed that last year. Mm-hmm. He's got leadership skills. He's got moxie. And I think that team is behind him. So I would call him a deep sleeper in fantasy. And the addition of either a White or a Cooper would certainly help that team's stock. And that offense is getting younger. I really expect Latavius Murray to be the running back there, although Jack Del Rio hasn't said that he's giving him the job. Of course, he's not going to say that. But Murray's got a lot of upside. We saw that last year in a few games, especially that one game against the Kansas City Chiefs where he had two touchdowns and over 100 rushing yards, and I think he carried the ball four times before he got hurt. And if you bring in a young wide receiver, like the kid from West Virginia or Amari Cooper, all of a sudden the Raiders, you know, that offense has got some good young talent on there, and it's worth keeping an eye on. But people are going to clamor for rookie wide receivers,
yep.
Brad, after what happened last year, because you had Mike Evans and Kelvin Benjamin and Sammy Watkins. Jordan Matthews had a really good season as well. I mean, and there was a huge impact made by that position in 2014. Not saying it's going to happen in 2015, but people are certainly going to be looking back to last year and saying, hey, you know what? All these wide receivers in their first year made a huge impact, so why not take a rookie wide receiver maybe in the middle rounds, roll the dice on one?
Wrapping up the combine and some free agent stuff, Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst with Brad Sussmat. Okay, over on running backs, Melvin mm-hmm. Gordon put up huge, huge numbers at Wisconsin, obviously. Gurley's coming off the knee injury. I kind of like Duke mm-hmm. Johnson late as a sleeper. That's just me. It's early on here. Mm-hmm. Then you have the Adrian Peterson uncertainty at the level where maybe the Vikings, with their first-round pick, are going to have to go after a running back. Take the combine aspect first with Gordon, then the Adrian Peterson factor, too.
Well, both the NFL and fantasy fans are really clamoring for young talent at the running back position. If you look at the top 10 guys going into 2015, you're looking at some age, Brad. Some guys are getting up there. I mean, once you hit 28, 29 years old
yep.
as a running back and you've had a lot of carries, I mean, things start to get a little bit worrisome, and Jamaal Charles is in that mix, and Marshawn Lynch is in that mix, and DeMarco Murray came off of 392 carries with the Dallas Cowboys. Matt Forte is almost 30 years old, so we're hoping to see some young running backs come in and make an impact. Obviously, everyone is going to be in love with Gordon, who made huge strides there at Wisconsin, especially last season. Wisconsin running backs coming into the NFL don't have the best pedigree, let's put it that way, but if he ends up, for example, with the Indianapolis Colts, boy, that's a good match. Or maybe he ends up with the Baltimore Ravens and they decide not to retain Justin Forsett, you're looking at a guy who could make an immediate impact. You're looking for opportunity and you're looking for talent. Nine times out of ten, that's the combination you need as a rookie, regardless of position, to come in and make that immediate impact. In terms of Todd Gurley, a lot of people think he's the best running back in this class, but he was injury-prone at Georgia, coming off an ACL, and he could be a running back that a team takes as an heir apparent. So maybe the Houston Texans decide, well, they're going to take him in the first round because Arian Foster's going to be 29 years old, and he's got a lot of tread. He's got a lot of wear and tear on his tires. So you're going to potentially see a move like that. I don't know. It really depends on Gurley's health. Can he come and make an impact as a rookie? Let's see if he can get into training camp and he's 100%. ACLs are not as serious as they've been in the past because of medical technology, but that is certainly something to keep an eye on. In terms of Duke Johnson, Miami running backs, they have a very good track record in the National Football League, a very good track record. You're talking about Frank Gore and Willis McGahee and Edgerrin James and Clinton Portis. A lot of really good running backs come out of that school. Lamar Miller last year. So that could be a scenario where he's drafted by a team that has a needed running back, and all of a sudden, much like Bishop Sankey last year, he's in the conversation as one of the top drafted rookies from a fantasy standpoint. Unfortunately, Bishop wasn't able to take hold of that job.
He was
really
horrible. He killed my team. He was awful. Terrible.
He could not get the job done.
No.
And that's where, yes, the opportunity was there, but the talent wasn't there to take a hold and take advantage of that opportunity. So these guys at running back, unless they are given they're going to be given that number one role. And the offense, you can't draft them too highly. And another thing to look at, too, is the running back who made the biggest impact in fantasy last year was who? Right? It was Jeremy Hill. And he went into a team that everyone thought Giovanni Bernard, including myself, was going to be the guy. So
killed me, too.
Talent certainly has a huge thing to do with it. There's no question about that. And sometimes the talent will create an opportunity. As for Adrian Peterson, you keep hearing stories back and forth. He's mad at the Vikings because they didn't back him. He's open to returning to the Vikings. Who knows? But it's one of the biggest storylines in fantasy football in 2015. And one thing that I could see happening, and you know me, I'm a Cowboys fan.
Yes, you are.
If the Cowboys decide to let DeMarco walk, which would depress me because DeMarco's a friend and he's a great player, the Cowboys could look to make a trade for Adrian Peterson, or if the Vikings outright release him, which I don't think will happen, that could be a match made in heaven. Imagine Adrian Peterson off of a year where he didn't play behind the Cowboys' offensive line. That, my friend, is as Kenny Banya would say, that would be fantasy gold, Jerry. Fantasy gold.
Yeah, so yeah. But here's the other. I'll flip it around on you, Cowboy fan. Okay. He sat out for a year. We don't know. Is his body going to come back the same, Michael?
You're right, but you're also talking about the same running back.
Yeah, that's true.
Who came off of an ACL reconstruction and rushed for almost 2,100 yards. The guy is not human, and you can argue it both ways. You can take your argument, or you can say he had a year where he didn't do anything. I'm sure he's keeping his body in shape. He'll be as fresh as a 30-year-old running back could possibly be, and maybe he puts up like a Curtis Martin type of season where Curtis had that huge year at the age of 31 there with the Jets. So time will tell, but that's one of the big storylines that fantasy owners really have to pay attention to in the offseason. When is he reinstated by the league? He's eligible to be reinstated in April. When he is, what do the Vikings do? And if the Vikings decide to part ways with him, where does he go?
Let you go off that. Appreciate getting caught up with you. Stay in touch. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.
You as well. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst. So we started the segment, Eric says in my ear, man, I missed this. Yeah, that's why there's 41 million Americans that do fantasy football. It happens. Dan Marley on the other side. Talk to the Lopes is next. We've not visited with the head coach at Grand Canyon University. He's been through some adversity. Lost his dad a couple of weeks back. And tough stuff there. And he still has 3 regular season games left. Although, is there a chance that they keep playing in the postseason? We'll explain that. Also going to talk to the coach about his upcoming schedule. adding teams like Louisville and other big name squads, and much, much more. Talk to the Lopes with Dan Marley's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Off we go into hour number two. Thanks for being with us. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. We grow by leaps and bounds into year number three. Brad Sussmat with you. It is time now for Talk to the Lopes. This week on Talk to the Lopes, head coach Dan Marley. Good to catch back up with Coach Marley. The basketball program is at Chicago State on Thursday. They've won four of their last five, a half-game lead over Bakersfield for second. And the coach joins us for a couple of minutes. Right off the top, person to person, man to man, friend to friend, condolences on the passing of your father. And I'm sure the last few weeks has been difficult for you off the court, on the court. Your team looks like they're coming into their own.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. You know, it's always tough, but it happens, and it's a tough deal for, you know, the family and my mom. So I appreciate that. And also, belated happy birthday to you, huh?
Yeah, they let anybody into the 50 club. So one day you'll be
there.
Yeah,
they do. Well, hopefully I'll get there soon. I got one day you'll be there. Hopefully I'll survive the season and make it to 50. But
enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it while you can.
Yeah. A couple more wins and I'll get there. But you know, we're having an okay season. It's you know, we're sitting at 16-12. We're 7-4 in the league. We're in second place at the moment, and we have three games left, two on the road, Chicago State, UMKC, and then we end up here at Seattle. And if we can find a way to finish strong here, you know, it'll be a successful year for us after going 15-15 last year and making strides. You know, I thought we did a good job this year, and just the ability to finish strong is going to be huge for our guys, and we've played well on the road. So I'll be interested to see how we play this weekend.
A couple things. Last time you and I really sat and chatted was over at Mesa Mountain View, and you were just watching some high school kids, and I've seen from afar as the season has progressed, it looks like you got your backcourt situation straightened out, which was the biggest concern I felt like coming into the first of the year.
Yeah, you know, I think we're pretty good there. You know, when we got Dwayne Russell back and had him playing here in the second semester, he's really a solidified point guard position for us. He's done a great job of taking care of the basketball. Our turnovers have went way down. I think we're at 13 turnovers a game before him. Now we're right around at 8 a game, which is huge. He gives us a scorer who can come off of screens and really score the basketball, but also does a good job of passing. And the biggest concern for us all year long has been our big guys. They're hard to find. We've had a couple injuries, and we had to start a freshman that we were planning on redshirting, and it's been a little bit of a struggle. So our biggest concern going forward is find us a couple big guys to help us, especially against teams like New Mexico State, who are really big and just wore us out on the inside and rebounding wise. So that's our biggest concern going forward. But I know what we'll address that and we'll answer that. And we're out there beating the bushes every day trying to find some good, solid big guys.
Dan Marley with Brad Sussmat. Talk to the Lopes Thursday at Chicago State. They have one more home game left. Although I have heard that you could potentially play in postseason in one of these tournaments other than the NCAAs this year. Can you talk about that and what the potential is for playing?
Yeah, we played in that last year. We played in the CIT. We played Pacific here at home and ended up, it was really a tight game, lost by two, and they went on to get into the semifinals. So with us winning the other day and getting our 16th win, it assures us of a .500 record. So by all accounts, I believe that we'll probably be playing in the CIT again. Whether we'll be hosting a game or going on the road, that hasn't been determined yet. But we plan on playing in another postseason game, which is big for our school and what we're trying to do here. And, the hope is that we can get out there and continue to play well and get a couple wins. And as I said, if we play well here down the stretch, there's a chance we could win 20 games this year, and that would be huge for our program.
I had the big Italian on last week, and whenever Mr. Colangelo comes on, it's always interesting. We did talk about how he felt you were doing this year, and he thought you were doing great. But more importantly, Dan, he talked about the Western Athletic Conference and his disappointment that the WAC is not allowing your program to play in postseason tournaments while in this period there are other conferences that are doing so. Do you have any thought on that? Are you disappointed the WAC isn't opening you guys up?
Well, it's very disappointing. And I had lunch with Mr. Colangelo. He stopped by practice and watched our practice yesterday, and we sat down and we talked, and I think there's going to be, now this is not by any means a done deal, but I think there may be a good chance that they're going to allow us to play in the WAC tournament next year. Mm-hmm. That's at least what we're pushing for. That would not only be good for us, but I think it would be good for our conference. I mean, this conference needs a little shot of the arm. I think Grand Canyon is a place that the WAC is proud of us having been there, and I think they're going to allow us, hopefully, to play next year, which, again, helps us recruit. It's tough going into homes, the high school kids, and not only telling them that they can't play in the NCAA tournament for a couple of years, but you're not allowed to play in your conference tournament. So there's other teams that are allowed to do that, and I would be surprised if we're not allowed to do it next year. So that's exciting, and I hope that does happen because, you know, our kids deserve it. They work hard all year long, and we finished third last year, and hopefully we'll be able to finish second if we finish strong. And there's no reason that we shouldn't be allowed to play in that tournament.
A little bit more that I had with Jerry. He said that there's a chance that the waiting period of 4 years could be waived. Is there any news on that front?
No, and you know, we've petitioned for that. I'm not as optimistic about that as I am about our WAC tournament. I don't think that's going to happen. So we just got to keep pushing along. And obviously every year it gets closer and closer. And as we go into homes, we can tell kids now that, you know, when I first started this, there was no way that the, you know, high school kid would be able to play in a tournament. Now, you know, your junior year, you'll be able to play. Mm-hmm. And then the year after that, you'd be sophomore year. So that gets easier and easier as the year goes along. And our whole deal here is to continue to get better and better. So by the time our fifth year, and we're eligible for that tournament, we have a very good team on the floor and have a chance to make it.
Last bit of news was Jerry saying there are other conferences other than the WAC that are interested in GCU. Have you sensed that?
You know, I think we're always looking, and we got our feelers out to see how we can improve our product and where we want to go. We're very happy that we are in the WAC and in the conference at this stage of our growth period. But I think we always have feelers out there and looking for other opportunities. Whether that happens or not, I'm not sure, but we got to make sure that that we are looking other places in case that we do have to make that move, or if something were to happen to the WAC, then we can move on and not be surprised by any decisions that are made. So we're always out there looking. That's a great thing about President Mueller and Mike Vaught, our new AD, is they got their pulse on what's going on. They're always looking for ways to make our brand better here at GCU.
Where are you at on storming the court? I mean, today, K-State, Kansas, it's been the national talk, and I'm just, from your point of view, where do you come down on that?
I would love to storm the court. We need to get a big win so our guys can storm the court. So I am 100% behind it. You know, we had a signature win earlier this year against New Mexico, and I had a feeling if we would have been beat New Mexico State the other day that might would have happened, and I'm not against it. I think, you know, there's obviously some things that could happen, but it's exciting. And we have such a great student fan base, and they're so polite, the kids here. I'm sure if they stormed the court, they would do it in a fashionable manner, and nobody would get hurt. They'd be very apologetic if they bump into somebody. So one day I hope that we have the opportunity to storm the court, and it would just show the progress that we're making, and I think it's just part of a great college atmosphere.
One last question, Dan. You mentioned the win over New Mexico earlier this year, and there was a lot made coming into this season about playing the games that you did this year, Kentucky and the Indiana. Moving forward, next year it's San Diego State, right?
Yep.
And who are your other non-conference?
We have right now we have scheduled, we've got Louisville and San Diego State. And the exciting thing about that is we were able to secure a home-and-home. So next year, we'll be playing at Louisville and at San Diego State. And the following year, both those teams will be playing here on campus, which is huge, because a lot of times you get programs like that, as they'll agree to come to Phoenix to play you, but usually you got to play them at U.S. Airways Arena or some other site, and there's no way that they would play here on campus. But Coach Fisher and Coach Patino graciously agreed to do a home-and-home and come and play on our campus. So, again, that's going to be huge. For everybody involved to have those type of programs playing in our arena. We'll have 7,000 strong there, and it'll be quite a scene.
See you soon.
And then, Brad, also we got a contract with Illinois. We're going to be playing them. And in 3 years, we will be playing Duke in the Hall of Fame Classic, which is going to be very exciting. So we continue to schedule
the best teams that we can find. And as we grow as a team, we will continue to try to play the best teams in the country.
Any closer to playing U of A or ASU?
You know, that's on them. We would love to start a rivalry. We would play ASU or U of A at any time. I think that's only good for the state. It's good for us. You know, they're not interested right now. The Pac-12 has a thing about playing us. You know, President Crow, and we would love for that to happen, and I think eventually it will, but I don't see it anytime soon.
Stay well. Appreciate the time. I'll see you at the Seattle game.
All right, thanks.
Later. There's Dan Marley for a couple of minutes. Talk to the Lopes. Good to catch up with Dan Marley. A lot going on the basketball program over at Grand Canyon University.